Well, we're listening to Rat-a-Tat. You're also listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
And welcome to something technology bites, blah blah blah.
Wow, it's not the end of the year, it's not the beginning of the year, so it's just something.
Back to usual.
Ah, it's the same old lame duck, boring technology bites you come to love and loathe.
It's a jaw. Just another Wednesday.
Just another Wednesday. All right, well, welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
We have our stalker photographer with us. Andrew Broadfoot is going to be hanging out in the studio playing with my Carl Zeiss 85 1.4 lens, which he's now coveting. It's nice to have something that someone covets because, you know, as a Sony shooter, which Andrew is also a Sony shooter, we don't have that same kind of, oh, cool, I got to get me one of those kind of conversations that all the Canon and Nikon users get to have all the time. So, anyway. All right, welcome to the show. We're so glad you could tune in. It's CES week.
C.
C.
E.
C.
S.
I think that means yes, it is in Spanish.
Yes, it is.
C, it is. Yes. Nice. So, we're going to, apparently, we're going to have Ed Bott. Ed Bott will be on the show.
That's right.
So, tell us who Ed Bott is.
I hope he does the whole thing in that voice.
That would be awesome. Hello, I am Ed Bott.
You could just follow after him and translate.
Yeah. He's a blogger at ZDNet, but he's a longtime tech journalist. He's been an editor and a writer and pretty much one of the most noted Windows gurus. His book on Windows 7, Windows Vista, and Windows XP have been kind of the top-selling Windows manuals for a long, long time. So he knows what he's talking about, but he's looking at stuff.
He knows a blue screen when he sees one.
He knows a blue screen when he sees one. So he's been at CES the whole time, and he's going to give us kind of a report on
it. Are you missing it this year?
I'm not missing it. I've been aggregating it on Tech Blog, and we've got the San Francisco Chronicle guys filing auto magically into Tech Blog, so we've had coverage. But I just don't feel like I missed much this year. Maybe I'll go back next year, but I just haven't seen anything that really, remotely that makes me go, "Damn, I wish I was there."
Well, aren't a lot of people sitting out this year?
There are, but there always are. You know, I mean, yeah. A lot of people didn't go. It just depends. I didn't go in 2009 either. It looks like the odd years are the years to miss.
I want to say that I have officially shed all regret from last DEF CON. I'm completely ready.
Are you ready to go?
Let's
book some hotel suites.
I am ready to go again. Who's coming with us? Is there going to get Flicked this year?
Yes. You know, if you can get Kraftwerk to play DEF CON 20th anniversary, I will totally go.
Well, it's not up to me, but the rumor is...
See what you can do.
We will play some Kraftwerk at DEF CON 20.
I'll dress as a Kraftwerk. Little Kraftwerk cosplay.
That would be worth going to see.
Yeah, well, that would be icing on the cake. Mm-hmm. I don't care. You know, I mean, I do care. I want them to play, but I think I'm going to go anyway.
Just to convince Flicted, it's a big year, and you're not a noob anymore. I mean, you've been
see, that's a good
one.
Thing
this
is yeah,
time to go, you know?
I really... Not sure that I wanted to go my first year, the 20th. It just seemed kind of lame. So I'm glad I went this last year.
Yeah, you're old time now. You're just like, oh,
yeah, I'm not old time. I'm still lame,
no,
but I'm just not as lame.
I remember DEF CON 19, you kids.
I mean, you know, Barrett did get us into the, No More Cheap Bugs party.
Yeah.
Which was the party to be at.
That was
at DEF CON.
That was leaked.
So. Oh, well, there were probably some leader ones that nobody heard of, but.
And nobody went to.
But the ones that, were known and talked about, yeah, that was the ones. So.
So do you think I would do okay at DEF CON?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I've got a friend to introduce you to.
Yeah.
Now I'm not going.
You know, just don't. If people ask you if you're Captain Crunch, just say no.
All right.
Because
always.
You kind of look like.
Could pass him off as a kinder, gentler Captain Crunch.
I've seen pictures of Captain
If young
Crunch,
boys so, yeah. start coming up to you and asking you odd questions, just, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Move.
No. Captain Steel Cut Oats.
I don't know how you do, to tell you the truth. I mean, I bet you would really enjoy the seminars.
I bet
you would really enjoy that part of it.
But it's late. If you're going to do after-hours activities, which is what a lot of people do.
Why could go to the classes that start before 2 in the afternoon and tell us all about them?
Yeah, see, I'm a morning person.
You would actually, so. I think there's stuff there for everybody. I mean, there are enough introductory kind of workshops to go. In the press room, there are a lot of actual notable press people that you probably heard of or have heard of you or, you know, you could hang out with them.
Or that I've seen at CES before. Well, the problem with going to CES for me is always the second day. Because I'm messed up time-wise, and everything is going late in the evening. So, you know, there are press events that happen at 10 and 11 o'clock at night, and I'm just like, I'm zoned out by then. Because I don't do well staying up late. By the end of this show, I'm kind of comatose.
So we just wouldn't see you at the parties, and yeah. Nothing really starts before midnight-ish, so.
And Barrett can give you some advice on Four Loko.
Yes, I definitely would it souns like you need Four Loko.
Yeah, but keep it on the radar. I think you should. You dig it.
All right.
You dig it the most.
Yeah, you know, just like any other IT situation, hurting geeks is a bit of a kludge. We'll need to have Emily with us again this year to kind of manage the social agenda of the geeks. The limousine that took an empty hotel suite and turned it into a party was probably also worth mentioning before the No More Bugs party.
No, the craziest thing about that...
Was the besides the lock picking?
Well, I wasn't going to mention that. And the bizarre stuff I drank,
which you were also going to mention.
No, but it was you know, like being there and like I'm not really all that interested in this stretch limo thing, which turned into a party stretch SUV.
Yeah.
But but then a guest showed up.
Emmanuel Goldstein.
Yeah, which was. That, floored me. I'm like, I'm in a party bus in Vegas with Emmanuel
Goldstein.
Yeah.
He's just taking a ride as far as the hotel that we're going to, and he's going to work his way on to somewhere else. Where is he going? What is he doing?
You might say who Emmanuel Goldstein is.
Emmanuel Goldstein is...
Editor of 2600.
Yeah.
Wow. He does an off-the-hook radio show in New York
WBAI.
City.
WBAI.
He's like... Super famous old school.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, referenced in the movie Hackers.
And from our limited exposure to him, not creepy in the way that
we really clever, yeah.
He ended up being all right.
He seemed pretty nice. I mean, yeah.
You got to dive into the deep end of the pool first, and everything else seems pretty tame. That's how that works.
All right. Well, so anyway, we're going to. CES got me thinking, you know, I was kind of wanting to go, but then I thought, you know, I'm not going to waste my Vegas juice on CES. I'm going to save it up for DEF CON.
Well, I was there.
It was just coincidentally the adult film thing, I think, is the Adult Expo is not at the same time as CES this year.
No, that's right. So that means that there's no real reason attendance. To go.
Even they pulled out.
Yeah. That's right. So now, I went already in December to see my daughter run the Las Vegas Marathon. So I've had my Vegas fix for a while.
That's true.
I had actually never been to Vegas before.
Oh, you hadn't?
Had no interest in
and
really going.
And he didn't
going.
Get really.
And I really didn't get the Vegas because I was pretty much in the hotel the whole time.
And the hotel is not on the Strip, so it's not like you can just pop right. out and go check out, you know.
Same hotel, DEF CON this year?
Yeah, they're keeping
Rio.
It there.
Okay. They love it there. Apparently Rio loves them and they love Rio. I haven't heard that it's going to change. But at the
the Rio is kind of out of the way.
At the last, Rio probably appreciates the business too. Right. But at the closing ceremonies, they were talking about how things were going with the Rio and how happy they seemed to be and that they were definitely going to come back.
The Riviera, the previous location, is definitely kitschy, and it's, you know, that has its charm. Mm-hmm. It's 60s era Vegas, definitely.
I think the problem was that they had, really run out of room.
Yeah, there were pinch points. Yeah. You couldn't move. It was just too many people. 6,000 people was too many people for those hallways.
When they've really grown up is when they hit the Venetian.
Well, what was interesting is I could only imagine what the previous hotel was like in terms of what the employees' expectations were. We're probably pretty jaded about the whole thing. But at this hotel, they were like, I just hear it's a bunch of computer games. You know? So I don't think that the overall staff was quite prepared for what was about to hit them.
It was pretty hilarious, though, seeing the people that obviously weren't part of DEF CON, walking around, looking at all the people that obviously were part of DEF CON because they were almost all wearing black shirts and had some kind of interesting hat or haircut or, you know, in some way, non-mainstream culture on some level.
Like you?
I like asking the cab drivers, hey, what's going on here? Why are all these people? And hearing the explanation every time.
Yeah, playing it straight and then seeing what they say. All right, you can tell by everybody's reaction to DEF CON that I think everybody else is also, or at least some others, are interested or kind of getting excited about it again.
Well, if anyone in Houston goes, definitely, you know, find us. Let us know before the show, and we'll do some sort of a meetup or do something.
713-REPRESENT 281, whatever other area codes, but there's a lot of Houston people there. This is good. All right, so what we're going to do is, besides jibber-jabber, we're going to go to San Antonio and the Technology Bites Info Shot, which will be followed up. Ed Bott should be calling in around 8:30 or so this should hopefully time out pretty nice. So take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Well, I guess this is a special edition of the Info Shot because it is actually not coming from San Antonio. It's coming from my hotel room in Dallas where business trip. So hopefully the free Wi-Fi will hold out nicely. I'm not going to talk a lot about CES during the Info Shot, mostly because we'll have a nice segment with Ed Bott coming up. But one of the things that was interesting, of course, Microsoft, this was their final keynote, and we'll talk about that. But now today in the Wall Street Journal, there's the end of an era kind of feeling with the whole final keynote. Microsoft executives warned that industry analysts' expectations for a 1% decline in fourth quarter personal computers may be too optimistic. Now, part of that's a result of the flooding in Thailand, which disrupted the supply of a key computer component. You know, that affects hard drives. And still, obviously, I think that it's a combo, that another aspect of this is the rise of non-desktops and particularly tablets and smartphones having on the business. So having a decline, that's rough, and so we'll keep an eye on it. You know, obviously, we'll know what caused it once the hard drive manufacturers in Thailand come back online. Then if the sales stay soft, then you know there's a different trend going on here that was just hidden by the flooding in Thailand. We mentioned last week that there were rumors, not rumors, but there was actually an event that Apple was going to have in New York City. The invitations have gone out, so it's got a little more information. It's an education announcement to be made at the Guggenheim Museum in New York City on Thursday, January 19th. There was word last week, and sources have indicated that the announcement will relate to publishing, with digital textbooks perhaps playing a major role. The New York Times confirmed that the event will focus on digital textbooks and that no new hardware will be introduced. That's too bad. I guess maybe they figure iPads would be sufficient to push textbooks and so on. But even so, it could be a potential shot across the bow on Amazon's Kindles and stuff like that. This one is interesting, and a lot of people may have had a spring in their step after worrying a little. Adobe CS6, Creative Suite 6, is coming soon. And one of the things, there had been some fear, owners of pre-CS5 suites had recently been told they would have to pay full price to upgrade to CS6. But now not only will there be special upgrade pricing for CS5 owners, but CS4 and CS3 owners. Now that means you legitimately own the software, not that you pirated CS3 and try to do it. We'll get a special discount that runs from whenever CS6 is launched this year until December 31st. CS6 itself remains largely a mystery, although Adobe is promising huge improvements and support for the Creative Cloud, a $49 per month service. Why be freaking creative for $50 a month? The letter will cover not just the Creative Suite, but additional functions and services such as its touch apps. So just some interesting news out of Adobe, which doesn't happen very often. But yeah, $50 a month for a service, it better be a heck of a nice service. I'll just say that. Do you think that there's maybe too many phones to choose from, especially in maybe the Android market? We've talked about that a little bit. Phone makers are starting to worry that people are getting overwhelmed by so many options, and as a result, some plan to reduce the number of models they produce this year. Motorola's CEO said that at CES this week, Sanjay Jha, reportedly said the company plans to make fewer phone models in 2012, in part because the variety is confusing to some consumers. HTC is thinking along the same lines. According to Drew Bamford, vice president of user experience at HTC, he said that at a panel discussion on Wednesday. When pushed, Ryan Biden, director of product marketing at Samsung, said that while he wasn't sure what the model count for his company would be in 2012, he agreed that they would look a lot like Apple. No, I'm sorry, that's not true. He agreed that the phone makers should drive down the numbers of phones. However, he said one reason companies like Samsung produce so many different models is because the technology evolves so quickly. I stressed that Samsung wants to offer products to suit many different kinds of customers, so that's another reason for the variety. But it does sound like they've noticed that people are starting to get confused, and that when they get confused, they don't buy phones. And other Microsoft, I guess, not so good news for them. I'm sorry. If you're a big Microsoft fan, I just don't have that for you. Microsoft, there had been rumors about them building a subscription TV service, a subscription-based TV service, sort of an alternative to cable or something like that. Well, according to Reuters, Microsoft built it and came up with all of it, but has scrapped the plans for a television service in reaction to high licensing costs. The service was said to feature voice and motion control for navigation and would have offered new content and live programming to users for a monthly fee. According to media executives familiar with the matter, Microsoft is now backing away from that model and is refocusing their efforts on delivering content over the web and on Xbox Live. So this will be interesting if rumors about what Apple's doing turn out to be true and they're successful with it, then you just wonder if somebody at Microsoft will be really kicking themselves. Or, of course, if Apple goes in and fails on it, then Microsoft saw it coming and wisely bailed out early. Either way, I guess we'll see what happens, but it does look like Microsoft did all the work to build this and then could not get the content to come in at a price that they could make work. So there's a challenge for anybody. Why not? We haven't had for a couple of weeks, we haven't had iPad rumors, but there are, this one's an interesting rumor that Foxconn and Pegatron, which are Apple's manufacturing partners, have begun production on the next generation iPad, with Foxconn once again bearing approximately 85% of the load. According to Japanese blog Makatara, the initial production batch is targeted for shipment in early March, in line with a number of rumors regarding the iPad 3 launch. This first lot production implements LCDs, which are produced by Sharp and aims to be shipped at early March, source told. That's because this from Japanese blog or from Tarzan. The report reiterates several of the details found in iLounge's reports on the device, including descriptions of a form factor that looks approximately the same as the iPad 2, but slightly thicker. Mako Takara notes that tight-fitting iPad 2 cases will apparently not fit the new model, but that the smart cover will be compatible with the new model despite an adjustment in the location of the magnets. Mako Takara has at times offered accurate information, but has had a few missteps, including claims of a late 2011 launch for the iPad 3, new flash memory for MacBook Air solid-state drive, and a SIM-less iPhone 4S. So you can make your own decision about whether this might have some validity and if you want to get your hopes up or any of that or not. Another just sort of sideline thing that I'm sure we'll talk more about with Ed Bott, but Thunderbolt. It sounds like that there are a number of Thunderbolt peripherals at CES. That's the high-speed interconnect developed by Intel and that is currently shipping on Apple products like the Air and the MacBook Pro. Finally, I guess it's been around long enough and has enough of installed base that companies have started to offer products for it. The options so far include a high-end professional RAID, an expensive portable RAID from LaCie, a pricey display from Apple, and a $50 cable necessary to connect them all. But they're super interesting products. Most of which should hit the market this year. Though Apple launched Thunderbolt in full force across most of its products in 2011, it looks like 2012 is when you're going to see really more stuff. There were several products that have been announced but not yet released to the public that got shown at CES now, so people saw them in person. Blackmagic's Intensity Shuttle video device, Belkin's long-promised Thunderbolt Express dock, so that you could plug in and have more ports, etc., and LaCie's two big Thunderbolt drives. Belkin's Thunderbolt Express dock in particular has been significantly redesigned from the initial concepts from last fall. It now has three USB 2.0 ports, FireWire 800, HDMI, 3.5mm audio, and gigabit Ethernet ports, and a downstream Thunderbolt port for daisy-chaining additional devices. It also includes a cable pass-through for a MagSafe power adapter designed to make it easy to keep on a disk for docking portable Macs. So that's pretty cool. Let's see. Unfortunately, Mac users looking for an alternative to Apple's $1,000 27-inch Thunderbolt display will have to wait until September for the dock to fit. This dock will be about $300, which is not inexpensive. Belkin representatives told Ars Technica that the existing docking solutions for MacBook users are similarly priced but are not nearly as elegant or easy to add. If you want to use a non-Apple display, it may be your only option. A few companies also announced new products in 2012. High-speed storage is the big popular use for Thunderbolt. Western Digital has the large-capacity MyBook Studio 2 drive with a Thunderbolt interface. The 2-drive RAID comes with up to 6 terabytes of capacity, although if you have to ask what the price is, it's probably, they haven't announced it, but it's probably expensive. Intel had a working sample of Elgato's new mobile Thunderbolt SSD drive, which is set to ship in February for $430 for 120 gigs. But it's obviously it's screamingly fast and has the huge Thunderbolt port on it, although it's not screamingly cheap, of course. So none of these Thunderbolt things are going to be inexpensive to start with. But assuming that the obviously these manufacturers, as more non-Apple manufacturers add Thunderbolt, then you should see more options on Thunderbolt products. And then finally, this one applies to Apple, but it could go for any notebook. MSI is showing off a new external graphics solution that can connect to a Mac through the Thunderbolt port. The MSI relies on the high bandwidth capacity of the 10 gigabit per second Thunderbolt port found on the latest Mac models, including the MacBook Pro and MacBook Air. It's an external chassis with a Thunderbolt interface and an internal PCIe slot, said Anand Lai Shimpi. Despite running on a MacBook Pro, there's currently no OS X support for the solution, but it does work under Windows. Presumably, if there's OS X support for the GPO inside the enclosure, it would work under OS X as well. So it would be an interesting, you know, especially for, say, the MacBook Air, when you want to bump up the graphics processing power when you're in a sort of desktop environment, something like this would let you open up the crank up the graphical power for an external monitor. So that's another unusual and interesting. You know, there's USB external graphics, but they are not, you know, they're not doing, they don't do better than the graphics inside the machine. They're actually, you know, not good for gaming, etc. But with a Thunderbolt port and an external PCIe slot, it would let you do some pretty serious stuff with your basic run-of-the-mill Apple laptop. And that's the news.
All right. So, yeah, that was a little brutal on the cutting out. I guess our network here is not doing so good, and your network in the hotel, it must be a little spotty, too. All right. So, welcome back to the show. I was reminded by Groovehouse that I can give out the vital stats on the show. So if you don't know these things, we're at kpft.org for the radio station, geekradio.com for our personal website or our radio show website. You can also join us on IRC, irc.cuckoo.com in the Tech Bytes channel. Or if you don't have your own IRC client, you can go to geekradio.com and use our Java client that we have there on the website. You can also use the website to send contact to us. If you don't want to be on the air with us tonight, you can use the contact form and ask your questions or make your comments that way. And the Geek Gathering, by the way, I want to mention that was really awesome on Friday. Dwight nailed it. It was just, the weather was good. The turnout was great. It was almost like a reunion. There were a lot of people that showed up that we hadn't seen in a while.
A lot of Geek Gathering veterans.
Yeah. It would have been It was just great. I really enjoyed it. I had a good time, and I appreciate everybody who came out and hung out with us on that Friday. And even though you had to leave early-ish,
earlier than normal, so
yeah, which is usually pretty early. All right, well, we got our guest on the line. It looks like so. We're going to bring Ed Bott on. So Barrett, we're going to press that and double press it so he doesn't go away. Welcome to the show, Ed Bott.
Hi there. Greetings from Las Vegas.
How are things in Las Vegas?
You know, noisy, smoky, crowded, and confusing.
Have you hit your limit yet, Ed?
I have, actually. I literally 10 minutes ago ended my last meeting of the CES, so I'm going out to dinner with some friends tonight. And then hopping on a plane in the morning, and then I'm going to go home and try and make sense of all of this and write something about it on ZDNet.
So the impression that I and a lot of other folks who've been watching from afar, and let me tell you, I'm glad I was watching from afar, was that this show seemed a little lackluster, that it didn't really have kind of anything that had a big wow factor. Was that your impression from being there?
Absolutely. This is one of those shows where I sort of walked around and said, where's the there? There's no there. There's an awful lot of accessories for different devices that, that aren't there. A tremendous amount of accessories for Apple products And yet, Apple, of course, isn't an exhibitor. Microsoft, probably, you know, probably the biggest indicator of the quality and the character of the show was the keynote that Steve Ballmer did, CEO of Microsoft, the other night. And, you know, you probably watched it on the web.
Yes.
And basically, he was validating Microsoft's decision not to come back to CES next year, because he was able, and you know, I mean, I felt bad for him personally and for the people who had to prepare this, because, you know, Microsoft has actually been on a pretty good run with products that they've introduced, and they've got some pretty good stuff in the pipeline, but right now they got nothing.
There was nothing to introduce, right?
There was nothing to introduce. So they were talking about some very successful products they've done, you know, 6 months ago with like Kinect, and they were able to talk a little bit about some products that they're going to have ready in, you know, 6 or 8 months in the case of Windows 8. But for right now, it was you know, it was basically, here's some stuff you already saw that we sold you last year, and here's some stuff that we're going to sell you next year, but we can't tell you anything new about it because that won't be ready until late February.
Well, one of the things that really intrigued me that I saw was both LG and Samsung doing motion and voice controlled television. And of course, Microsoft has been doing that for a while with the Kinect as an add-on to the Xbox.
Right.
And Apple is rumored to be doing that with Siri when and if they ever do their own TV. Did you get a chance to try either of the Samsung or the LG motion-controlled or voice-controlled TVs?
No, I was in both the LG and the Samsung booth today looking at that, and they were kind of tightly controlling it, which, you know, sort of suggests that it works, but it's not quite ready for prime time yet.
Well, and I would suspect that the noisy atmosphere of a show booth is not going to be the best place to try out voice-controlled television, too.
Right. I was in one booth today for, you know, DTS, which is the company that they're famous for their audio processing, and they're really great people with really great products, and we were laughing over the incongruity of trying to demo products in the CES environment, which is noisy and chaotic and crazy. But right now, I actually feel peaceful. I'm standing in a casino, surrounded by slot machines, and there's a bunch of music playing in the background with me. But it feels like I'm in a Zen monastery after having left the show floor.
Well, you know what's, you know, the thing I noticed about Las Vegas for the first time, and I apparently it's been this way for a while, but when I was there in December, I noticed that the slot machines are all now coinless. Mm-hmm. There's no coins. And so you don't hear that sound in a casino of the coins hitting the box.
The only time you hear that is when you hit one of the 2 or 3 year old machines that still have the clang, 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 clang sound effect. But that's just a sound effect. And we actually, we discovered this last night because we went by a slot machine, and I told Judy, my wife, I said, oh, I've got 3 quarters in my pocket here. You know, why don't you play them off on this machine here? And
you can't.
And said, you can't. There's no slot. You can put in a ticket or you can put in a bill. But, you know, your coins are not money here.
That's right. So did you get a chance to see the Nokia Lumia 900?
Yes, I saw all of the Nokia Lumia phones. I didn't get a chance to actually touch the 900. It was in a plexiglass case, probably, you know, filled with nitrogen or something to protect it from human contact. But you know, and I was there with a couple of people who are kind of in the industry but had never really seen them before, and their eyes got big and wide when they saw these phones. They're really well built and just very impressive little bits of engineering. The 900 is a big, it's a big device.
For listeners who may not be aware of the context, can you explain a little bit about what it is about this Nokia Lumia 900 phone that makes it important?
Well, it's huge. It's like the it's like the HTC Titan. So I think it's a 4.7 inch screen.
Yes.
And so you look at it and you go, well, okay, I need Charles Barkley's hands.
And this is the phone that Microsoft is counting on to kick it in the stratosphere in the U.S.
Right. This is the one. It's good, and they were very coy about when it's going to be introduced in the United States, but within months. It has LTE support, so this is 4G, but it's the fast 4G or the really fast 4G, instead of just the fast 4G.
It's not 4G.
It's not 4G.
It's a cool screen too, isn't it?
And it has reportedly one of the best cameras that you'll be able to find on a mobile phone, and that includes Apple's products. Nokia, which I'm trying to learn how to pronounce the company's name properly.
Oh, it's not Nokia.
It's Nokia. Is at least that's what I was. That's what I was told by Mr. Ballmer last night. So I'm going to take his word for it.
Maybe he was threatened to knock your teeth.
Yeah, we'll get an MP3 of it.
No, he was just said not going to be here next year.
it's just a great camera in their devices, and you know these days that is. I mean, that's one of the core features that people look for in a phone. And so Microsoft's going to put, Microsoft and Nokia have a lot. They've built a very solid business relationship, and the rumor is they're planning to spend, somewhere between $100 and $200 million marketing and promoting these products worldwide over the next year. And so I think, they want to push this line into the public's awareness, and we'll see how well they do.
Well, I've gotten the impression that pundits in the technology field feel that 2012 is the year that Microsoft needs to make its play. Do you think this phone is going to be significant in their efforts to kind of assert themselves in the mobile market?
Well, Microsoft is, they're basically, I guess if I'm standing here in a casino, I might as well, make the proper metaphor. But, they are standing at the craps table, with, just about every chip they have on the line there. And they are ready to start rolling the dice with their desktop products and new tablets and their line of phones, Windows 8 on the desktops and all, and so it's really a couple years ago, before anyone had heard what Windows 8 was about, some people who were Microsoft employees saw it, and one of them said, "This is the biggest bet that Microsoft has ever made." And when you see what they're doing this year, you have to agree with that. They're either going to succeed spectacularly, or if they don't, then I don't know what happens to the company. But they're certainly doing some amazing things, tying all these different products together with a common interface and some common technologies.
Well, they had, Microsoft had tried before with Windows and Windows Mobile to have a semi-common interface. There was a start menu and so forth. But it looks like they started with the Windows phone interface and now are carrying that over. So in order to achieve that, they're throwing out the traditional Windows interface.
I don't think it was accurate to say that they're throwing out traditional Windows.
Well, that's true, because you can do the desktop on Windows 8. You can do the old school desktop.
Yeah, but also, right, that's their... I had a chance to look and see at some of the stuff they're doing that's going to show up in the beta next month. And it's... The traditional desktop will be there. Some new applications will be there. And I think... I think they believe that consumers and businesses are ready to be pulled into a simpler, cleaner world of applications, and that they can successfully navigate this by keeping the compatibility with the old applications and building up and quickly building up a new generation of applications that are that offer the same capabilities, but in a simpler, more modern fashion. Again, big bets.
So back to the CES and the show, can you tell us what you saw was kind of the goofiest, stupidest product? Because there is always one that just kind of made you shake your head.
Well, I don't know if I'd call it goofy or stupid. I mean, it was actually kind of cute. There was Qualcomm, the big chip giant that has made made some of the good mobile phones over the years. They're just a giant. But in one of the halls, they had they were showing off a little product that's about the size of a wristwatch, and you attach it to your dog's collar, and then you have a little base station in your house. And an app that goes on your iPad or your iPhone or your Android device. And if your dog gets out of your yard or goes through the gate, you get alerts on your phone and you can find the dog on your GPS.
Find my iDog.
They call it Tag, T-A-G-G.
There was a product at CES a couple of years ago where it was a GPS for your dog, and you subscribe to a service that lets you watch it on a website. But
this sounds like it's fairly similar, but I think the nuance that they had on this was
you get alerts.
Yeah, you get alerts if it goes outside the safe zone there.
Can you push a button and zap the dog?
they didn't seem to have that feature on there. But as the owner of a very energetic 3-year-old Springer Spaniel who likes to run very fast up into the hills, as soon as the gate is opened up, I looked at that and I said, well, I could probably use this.
They should probably make an app that sends alerts to your dog if your iPhone gets out of range.
Sometimes I think that dog is smart enough that that maybe she wants to track me, find out when I'm coming home to feed her dinner.
So, did you anything you saw that other than possibly the Lumia 900? Anything you saw that you really want to bring home that you loved?
That's one of the things about this show is that there were plenty of things that were really nice advances in technology. The ultrabooks are genuinely interesting products and a good way for a Windows person to have hardware that has a lot of the same design and engineering feel that Mac owners have known for a while now. But I honestly, aside from maybe one of the 92-inch 3D TVs, there wasn't really anything that I wanted to bring home with me.
Did you get a chance to see the HP Envy Spectre?
The Envy, yes, I did, last night.
Mm-hmm.
A very good looking machine, and the thing that I liked most about it, it was part of the pitch, was the 9.5-hour battery life. Now, you can't see that, and I'm always skeptical of any claims of battery life.
Right.
But if that were true, in fact, if it were even 80% true, sign me up.
Well, the Spectre supposedly is the exterior is all Gorilla Glass. Did you get a chance to handle it?
I did not. No, I did not. I did meet with the Gorilla Glass people, though, and I got to see Gorilla Glass 2, which is even tougher than the original Gorilla Glass. And I got to see a an 82-inch active stylus-enabled touchscreen, similar to the kind of devices that you get to see if you turn on CNN during the elections or a hurricane, which these days are, they're both natural disasters.
Well, you need that in your home.
I need one of those in my home. And what was interesting is I talked to the CEO of the company that was producing these giant touch and stylus enabled displays, and they're the ones who manufacture the ones that you see on CNN, literally. He was adamant that the most significant advance in display technology that consumers are going to see in the next year or two in both tablets and notebooks and stuff is the return of the active stylus into tablets and notebooks, because it's something that people are going to discover the need for again.
I'm skeptical, of that. But.
A lot of people are skeptical, but this guy is able to sell TV display screens for $100,000 a pop to CNN, and they bought they buy dozens of them, so I don't know. Maybe I'll take his word for it.
We'll see. All right, Ed. Well, I know you got a dinner.
Other screens. Did you get to see the 8K sharps?
Pete, you're really cutting out.
I did. I stood in front of the 8K screen at the Sharp booth today, and both Judy and I, our jaws were, we had to literally pick them up off the floor because it's such a beautiful display.
Did it make all the rest look really
sorry,
I mean,
Pete.
Everything you saw after that, you kicked? Okay.
Yep. We're all breaking up here, so I think what I'm going to say is... good night from CES, and thanks for having me as a guest.
Appreciate you being with us tonight, Ed. Thanks so much for spending some time with us. Now, don't lose all the rest of your money.
Okay, thanks.
Have a good meal.
See you later.
Good night.
Bye now.
All right. So that was Ed Bott. Does Ed Bott have a website?
Yes, edbott.com, or also at ZDNet. He's there on the front of ZDNet. So ZDNet.com, you'll find him too.
Awesome. Pete, you are really, really choppy. I mean, you cut out, like it'll get half a sentence when you talk, and it's really spotty.
Ouch.
So I just want to let you know that's going on. Are you on the wireless at the hotel, or do they have an Ethernet option? Hello?
Just wireless. No Ethernet option. Sorry.
No Ethernet option?
Or is it not your microphone cutting out? Is it like voice activated or something? Hello?
No, but there is. I've been muting just.
Oh.
4 seconds of lag between here and down.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Okay, that must be it, the lag.
Ouch.
Yeah. All right, well, we have about 12 minutes before the top of the hour, which we have to break in about 8 of those minutes. So we got a little time. If you want to get queued up to be on the air with us tonight, 713-526-5738 is the number to call to be on the air. For those who missed the Geek Gathering, there are pictures up on the website at geekradio.com in the gallery. You can figure that out, I'm sure, pretty readily. Great pictures of Barrett and my. I was very happy with the photo that I got of Dwight, of him contemplating the beach ball on his Mac.
Yeah, it was good enough. I made it my Facebook avatar. So,
well, good.
I like the timeline, the new layout for the Facebook profile page.
Yes,
but I wish, they have that kind of banner image that you can have behind your avatar. But I wish they'd let you make the avatar a little bigger. That picture would have looked a lot better. I cropped it a couple different ways before I settled on something.
Square.
Yeah,
yeah. Maybe you should make that the banner.
No, because it is more of a square design. And also, I love the fortune cookie that I have up
there.
Yeah,
that's a good fortune cookie. All right, 713-526-5738 to be on the air with Technology Bites. Groovehouse is sitting by waiting to take your call and put you into the queue. It's going to be interesting if we have to kill time just now, you know, for these last 8 minutes before we have to do a little station break. It'd be nice to have a call come in on that. The pictures on the website are they're not as good as the ones. If you really want to see good versions of the photos, become a fan of our Facebook page at facebook.com/geekradio. But the first batch of photos are for me, and the second batch, there's another batch of photos mixed in there from R. Clayton McKee, who was out there shooting with a small Panasonic camera. He's a old time photographer. I think he used to shoot for the Post.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he did.
Yeah. So there was some lamenting about the demise of the Post, and you were telling us that they took all the printing presses out of the Houston Chronicle building downtown.
Yes, they did. Over the past few months, they have been pulling out the three-story presses that were in the downtown building. We have been printing at the old post building for several years.
Yeah.
And so these presses have not been in use at all. And now it's just kind of this post-apocalyptic space that's three stories tall with just, you know, old dried ink all over the floor. It's really, I posted a few pictures to Twitter. Maybe I should put them up on Facebook.
Are they going
to
do anything with it or just leave it open and?
I don't know. There was, I know that our editor, Jeff Cohen, actually had a plan to move the whole newsroom in there and kind of this open
loft. We could probably play paintball there and nobody'd notice.
Yeah, or bowling. I like the idea of bowling.
Well, I just think you can shoot it up with paint.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we got a call in the queue. We got another call coming in. Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's there?
Who's there?
Knock, knock.
Who's there? It's John.
Hey, John, you're on the air. John? Yeah.
John who?
Hey.
Go ahead, hello. John.
John, can you hear me?
Yes.
Are you on the air? Would you like to ask a question?
I was calling about external hard drives. Could you tell the audience about that?
About external hard drives.
Yeah.
What do you want to know about them?
I'm in the process of switching over all my music. My computer's getting full. And what's the best way to do all that?
All right. That's kind of a broad question. It seems like you're I almost Pepsi syndrome myself. All right. Well, we had another call in the queue. Is this who I think it is? No. Groovehouse says, no, it's not
that. I don't think it's that JR.
But right. Go ahead and put him on the air.
All right, we'll take JR.
JR, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I enjoyed the report from CES.
Okay.
Although this year, I've been paying more attention to the Detroit Auto Show than CES.
I've seen some photos coming out of there. It looks like there's some interesting concept cars coming out of the...
Well, yeah, Microsoft is doing cars too. Don't forget that.
Oh, that's right. Sync.
Yeah. I wonder if anyone has heard anything interesting about the most important thing I see in this Microsoft Nokia thing. Both of those companies are betting the farm, I think. But as I understand it, they're both betting on AT&T. I mean, how the hell do you do anything if the damn monopoly carriers have you by the short hairs?
Well, they're launching the initial phone on AT&T as exclusivity, but eventually... This particular phone will be on all the carriers. Right now, you can buy Windows Phone devices right now on all the carriers. But initially, it'll be available just on AT&T. And I think they're doing that because of AT&T's LTE network, and they want to do a GSM phone as opposed to a CDMA phone.
I wonder if anybody has heard anything about Lightspeed. Because they're supposed to be wholesaling LTE.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, Sprint was was going to work with Lightspeed, but I think I probably should Google this, but I think Sprint decided not to work with them. I think they're going to work with the same folks who are doing WiMAX. So, you know, Lightspeed is there, but the network already exists with AT&T, or AT&T is building it out. And also Verizon, of course, has its further built out network. So my suspicion is they'll go to AT&T, Verizon, and then to the smaller guys.
Okay. Well, this just reminds me of 10 years ago, which is about a million years ago in computer time, when both Bill Gates and Andy Grove, who were big even then, just really raised Billy Kane because they felt everything they were doing was being held hostage by the telephone monopoly.
Well, back then they were focusing on PCs, and the telephone monopolies didn't have much to do with PCs.
No, but they had everything to do with what was called connectivity even then. And connectivity, you know, once you have processors more powerful than most people know what to do with, and bigger hard drives than most people know what to do with, you know, the next frontier is connectivity, and connectivity, as far as I can tell, is still totally screwed up.
Well, how is it screwed up?
Two things. Of course, we're behind in most measures of any sort of broadband you can think of.
Who's we and how? Who's this we you're talking about?
Wait a minute.
You wait a minute. I'm going
to
ask.
He's referring to the U.S.
The U.S.
The U.S. is behind a lot of other countries in broadband speed to the house.
Okay.
And the reason for that is that we built out broadband in the early days and built it out on legacy infrastructure, on telephone wires and cables. Other countries like Korea and other countries in Asia built it out fresh from scratch on fiber optic because they came at it later. So it's a matter of us having to deal with a legacy infrastructure.
All right. Well, listen, hey, we're out of time. We're going to have to, we can put you on hold and have this conversation after the break, but or you can just call back in. We're going to go ahead and get ready to do our little station break here at the top of the hour, which is coming up in a matter of, you know, seconds, actually 25 seconds to be exact. All right. Well, I don't know exactly where he was going. Maybe we'll figure that out.
He got all riled up listening to Pete cut in and out.
That's what it is. I mean, that is
connectivity.
All right. Well, you're listening to Technology Bites here on KPFT. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
We'll be back right after these messages with Barrett Time.
January is Poverty in America Awareness Month. Join us as we recognize a vastly increasing problem and aim to rectify it. The Fourth Quarter of Change Unity Event one-year anniversary party for Toiletries for Families will be Thursday, January 19th, 2012 at 511 Main Street, Houston, Texas 77002. Join us for an evening of entertainment, encouragement, and education. We will feature local artists of paint, poetry, and music. Fill a quarter roll and bring it to 511 Main and contribute to change. For more information, call 713-396-2787. KPFT Houston.
Listeners support KPFT in many different ways. Some write checks and others use credit cards, but if you're spinning your wheels looking for a tax deduction, think about donating your working but unwanted car, motorcycle, boat, or truck to KPFT. You'll qualify for a tax deduction and, at the same time, take care of unfinished business. To make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 877-308-3255. 2408. We'll arrange for your vehicle to be picked up and the title transferred. Then we'll send you a receipt for your tax deduction. It's really that simple to support the station you have come to rely on for music, news, and public affairs programs. Again, for more information or to make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 877-308-2408. You are tuned in to commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you...
Yeah. That means it's time for... Yeah. Anyway. Take it away, Barrett.
All right. We'll start out with the first ever Barrett Time Tech Question / Desperate Cry for Help. Actually, Chris Fenton needs your help. After constructing a 1/10 scale, cycle-accurate Cray 1 supercomputer and finding a disk with Cray software on it, he's ready to start loading the operating system. There's one small problem, though. No one knows how to boot the thing. Chris posted a disk image for a Cray 1 XMP with the help of people at archive.org. Now he's looking to the community for help. If you think you can reverse engineer the file system, Chris will pay handsomely with a miniature model of a Cray printed on his MakerBot. So if you think you're the man, woman, or child who can reverse engineer a Cray bootloader, surf over to hackaday.com to lend your talents. Hopefully they've already tried pressing the power button. I've never thought of cutting down a Cray like that. I wonder if you could get it small enough to fit into a unibody MacBook chassis. Definitely take a Craybook Pro down to the local coffee shop. If you're harboring your own plans for world domination that involve sourcing some new-to-you Apple hardware, you'll want to clear your calendar for the morning of Saturday, January 21st, for the Houston Area Apple Users Group, affectionately referred to as HOG. The event takes place at 7008 South Rice Boulevard from 9 in the morning until 1 in the afternoon. The event is free to attend for casual swappers, but if you plan on hauling in more gear than you can carry under an arm, you'll want to register for a dealer table. Info on that and more is available at the HOG site at www.haaug.org. If you're carrying an Android headset, you've actually got a little Linux with you wherever you go. Why not take the plunge to get to know the real deal this Saturday the 14th at the first Linux Users Group bi-monthly presentation of 2012. The group gets together from 2 to 4 in the afternoon for an hour and a half presentation on something Linuxy at the HalPC headquarters. All are welcome. You don't have to be a member of HalPC or a Linux guru to attend. And some of what you'll learn about Linux can be applied to your Android phone. If you would like to consider joining the Houston Area League of PC Users, there are two things you need to know. One, despite being named the league, they don't issue uniforms, superhero, bowling, or otherwise, though that doesn't stop you from wearing your own. And two, while they do have a monthly general meeting, the special interest groups are where it's at. Surf their SIG calendar to see what you can converse and learn about in topics diverse as such as SIGs. Excuse me, start totally over. SIGs include database and graphic user interface design, Microsoft Server genealogy, computer investing, robotics, and even Cybex tech, if that's your thing. For details, directions, and this month's list of events, hit www.halpc.org. There's a hyphen in between how and PC. And if you're familiar with the Benoni, the modern Benoni, the modern Benoni classical variation, the modern Benoni four pawns attack, and of course the Benoni defense, or even if you just know every word to every They Might Be Giants song ever written, you might want to consider reliving your high school chess club days by swinging by the West Gray Cafe Express at 7 o'clock Monday night for a pickup game of chess at the Houston Chess Biweekly Meetup. Finally, a chance to relive the glory days without worries of wedgies or lost lunch money. Does anyone in the studio play chess by any chance?
A little bit.
A little bit. Do you have a favorite opening, favorite signature opening, anything?
No, usually just just get the pawns out of the way and get those heavy hitters out on the field.
Anyone else play? No, not so much. My own highly explosive opening is pawn to c4. Boom goes the dynamite. That's it for your Weekend Geek. That's that for Barrett Time.
Oh, mercy. All right, so... here we have. Oh, Peter has left the show. The lag was just too much to bear.
The chair is against the wall.
The eagle has flown.
John has a long mustache.
Walk of shame.
you completely went somewhere else. We're not reliving college days here.
You're doing the walk of shame because of John's mustache. That's an entirely different
exactly.
All right. Well, we're back for the second hour of Technology Bites. Peatless and botless. So, and callless.
And callerless at the moment.
Well, we had some interesting... Those two calls that tried to come in at the end of the show were a little... Tell us about external hard drives.
They screened, harmlessly.
If Flickdub was ever going to, like, prank call the studio, that sounded like the kind of prank call he would do. Like, that was
I just looked up a Cray XMP.
You did?
That thing is nice.
Because I was telling him that people used to think they were, like, postmodern couches, and they would sit on them. But he had never seen one. So yeah. I was like, yeah, they like to kind of like have a silo in the center with a bunch of panels and a circular, half circular shape. But then about a foot and a half off the ground, they stick out about a foot and a half or 2 feet. And there's flat panels across those that are usually a different color. And it looks sort of like some postmodern kind of couch.
At my computer oriented cafe, that would be some of the seating.
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah. They're really pretty cool looking. I mean, they look like something out of, 2001 or whatever. They were cool looking machines.
Yeah. THX.
The future, man. 713-526-5738. The future will be you calling in to Technology Bites to be on the air with us here this evening for some computer talkage. 713-526-5738. Yeah, all of this talk about CES... I'm glad I didn't go either. I mean, didn't sound like it was the thing. I was funny that he mentioned how there's all these accessories out there for products that aren't
there. Right.
Right.
So, wow.
Well, there are a lot of... the one time I went to CES, the one thing I did notice is there's a ton of companies out there that are selling accessories. Cases and adapters and all that. And if you don't actually... it's got to wade through all that to find the actual good hardware.
And
lots of giant TVs.
Yes. I don't know if they did it the way they do it. They did it last year, if they're doing it this year. But over in one of the separate convention halls, they had nothing but the small suppliers, case suppliers. And that's kind of the fun place to run around, is in where these small guys are working. And you kind of see little interesting gems in there. And I don't know if anybody... saw this on the web today, but apparently Justin Bieber got up and did some dog and pony for a Japanese robot company that makes this little toy $500 robot that dances and sings. And so there's Justin Bieber in this hall, basically up
amongst
there.
The nerds that
amongst
love him.
The nerds.
Bieber
that love
became
him.
A booth babe. That's how
Bieber was a booth babe. Exactly.
Booth babe. All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight.
So did they ever give any pricing on that OLED?
They have not. The 55-inch OLED.
Insanely expensive.
Yes, insanely expensive. Although they have come up with new ways to create OLED TVs, including a printer that prints the screen.
In strips.
And which makes it a lot cheaper to do.
They were supposed to do that so they could print on flexible plastic, so they could make screens that were bendable.
Right, but they're using, but because it's so easy
it
to do,
OLED.
But it also makes them very thin. So when you see the pictures of that TV, it looked like it couldn't be.
They
that
said the
thin.
Bezel was like a millimeter, or
a millimeter on the bezel. Right,
that's thin.
Right.
Wow, the phones are so quiet. I mean, I don't want to drum up the. Tell us about hard drive kind of questions, but it'd be nice to have some calls. 713-526-5738. There's one. There's a call. Because soon we'll be asking for people to call in and pledge money, so you should take advantage of this.
Oh, no. When does that happen?
I don't know the exact start time for it, but I saw some paperwork in my mailbox.
That's right. There's a February one, isn't there?
I think so.
Yeah.
713-526-5738. Groovehouse got rid of that call quick.
That hurt my ears.
What was it?
I don't know. It was like somebody dropping the phone a lot. Every now and then.
Dropping his external hard drive.
Screaming external hard drive between every drop.
Tell us about... All right. 713-526-573.
Don't call the number just because you hear it.
Yeah.
Call us if you have a computer question.
That's kind of like when I write my column and I talk about software to deal with certain things, people that read my column will just go and install the software. Even if they're not having the problem that the software is meant to address. And then they'll say, okay, now what do I do? It's kind of like those people that used to load up every piece of software that came on the disc inside of PC Magazine. You get that disc with 100 or 200 utilities
They're
on
all
it.
Mine.
It's all mine, and it's all going on my 500 meg hard drive. Yeah, sadness. All right, there's some phone lines firing up. And that's an interesting photo there. What is that a picture of? Is that your microwave? Toaster oven? Yeah. All right. So I'm hungry now. Make some toast. 713-526-5738 to be on the air. Groovehouse is in the process now of screening some calls to be with us. That's awesome. And they look like they're going to be some legit calls, which is also awesome. So while he is, I'm wondering if while he's screening that one, we should go ahead and take Deb. You're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
Hey, I'm thinking about buying a tablet, and I just kind of prefer, I have a Droid phone, so I'm just wondering what you guys think about the Droid tablets that are out there and any recommendations you might have.
Well, you know, it's, if you're interested in technology that also ran, I suppose, the Android tablets and the Android phones are pretty good. I'm sorry.
I hate your language, but it's a little bit true.
Yeah, I'm sorry to say that I mean, what are you going to use it for?
Nothing in particular. I don't need it for work or anything like that, so it would just be playing around, maybe watching a movie, you know, just being...
What's the one with
coming
out with five processors, four of the main ones, and the fifth that controls the other four? That's supposed to be pretty awesome.
Oh, I don't know, but that's probably overkill for what, you know, I don't care much for the Android tablets. I think the iPad is a better choice, particularly for media consumption. But one of the ones that I liked a lot, Acer, had one called the A500, I believe it was a 10-inch tablet. Very nice interface, relatively clean interface. They don't junk it up with a lot of widgets and so forth that are often prone to Android. The other thing you might take a look at if you primarily want to watch movies and read books and use it for media is the Kindle Fire, which is an Android tablet. It's very simplified.
And a better price.
Yeah, right, $200.
Yeah, $200. It's a reasonable price to pay for a tablet that has a lot of great functionality in it. And there will be a Netflix app for it. There are, you know, a lot of good standard media consumption apps, plus the whole, you know, Amazon book experience.
Right. If you're an Amazon Prime member, you know, where you get the free shipping, then you get a lot of free movies that you can stream on it as well.
Well, here's a question I didn't think to ask about the, you know, the previous Kindles had 3G or they didn't have 3G, they had wireless data plans to connect to Amazon to buy books.
Right.
Do the Kindle Fire have to buy a data plan for that?
No, it's Wi-Fi only.
Oh, it's Wi-Fi only.
Right. And so you know, if you want 3G, you won't get that with the Kindle Fire. You might. There's also another option is Barnes & Noble's Nook tablet, which is actually a little bit more powerful in terms of hardware. It doesn't have as good media selection, as good app selection as the Kindle does.
Yeah, I know someone that has a Nook, and it looks pretty cool. He has all his art stored on there.
Right. Right, and the Nook has been around for a while. They just released a kind of a more powerful version and renamed it the Nook tablet. But in terms of your choices for media consumption, the Kindle Fire is probably a better choice if that's what you want to do with it.
Okay, well, thanks for the ideas.
All right, well, have fun. Bye.
All right.
When it comes to buying, I guess the Kindle Fire is actually, you know, if I was looking to spend, you know, non-hurtful amounts of money on tablet technology, the Kindle Fire is a pretty nice looking device.
When it first came out, it did not get great reviews. I didn't care much for it at first, but the Amazon has delivered an update to the software that fixes a lot of the problems with the software, speeds it up, and I have found I really enjoy, you know, I do most of my book reading before I go to sleep at night, and it's the 7-inch size of the Kindle Fire, the size is just right for kind of reading in bed, so I like it. And I'm perversely, I'm reading the Steve Jobs biography, so on the Kindle.
All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
All right.
I see the subject.
It's a legitimate one. All right. We're going to take Tanny.
Tanny, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, good evening, guys.
Good.
Hey, a comment first, man. I just wanted to give y'all credit for doing such a great show over so many years and helping out, you know, so many normal people. But I know we got the fun drive coming up, too, and they really highlight, you know, how much it really costs to run the show every hour. And I think even wasting that minute on the guy with the more broad hard drive question could have been a little more invested. We can just give him simple some help, like check how big the files are, you know, then he can kind of see what size drive he should be getting. I know y'all could suggest Seagate, Western Digital. I don't know who else.
Well, it was a pretty open-ended question. Days, unfortunately, with only a few minutes left to go before the top of the hour, the question was just, you know, like, what's the meaning of life?
Certainly, and, but in 5 seconds, I think I just sent him on a little direction right there.
Well, good for you.
Man, you guys do great, and I just want to see it keep going, you know?
All right. Thanks for your call.
Appreciate it. Have a good one.
What's the matter, Groovehouse?
So he went ahead with his advice and didn't have a question of his own?
No.
Great.
That's okay.
713-526-5738. If you have a computer question, we'd like to help you answer it.
It probably is friends with the guy who called in, so they're probably in the same house or something.
Questions only, no solutions.
Oh.
That's my motto.
That's your motto?
That's
you're
my motto.
Of the calls, so you'll be the one in charge of enforcing your motto. All right. Well, it's an odd night. It's always an odd night, I think, when we start off with a guest. You know, we do a guest. It kind of changes the tempo or the pace of the show a little bit, and we don't have that first hour building up of phone calls and so forth. And we kind of lunge into the second hour or stagger into the second hour, trying to regain our footing. So we have about 45 minutes left of Technology Bites. We have all of our lines are open. We're in the mood to take all callers, you know, especially computer questions. Like Groovehouse will be making sure that you're calling in with a question. But, you know, I'm sure you could slip past him if you told him you had a question and then came in with a comment. But we'll do the best we can with whatever we get. I don't want pity calls, though. Please don't give us pity calls. You know, if you have a real question, real conversation you want to have about technology, that's what we want to have. Otherwise, we'll just, you know, find something to do. Now, Barrett, I see you kind of browsing around there, looking around on Google and stuff. What are you doing?
I was trying to track down that quad core with the extra CPU just for the touch experience. It's the Transformer Prime.
Optimus
Prime. All right. Did you post the Barrett time to the
website? No, although I have it in easily postable format. I will do that right now.
Well, there you go. All right.
Get to work.
You know what you should do is you should just write it in the WordPress editor.
I'm breaking away from reading it outside of Emacs. This was kind of my gateway reader. You know, so once I kind of lost the line, which is where I stumble. So we'll get there eventually. We're going from the CLI.
You know, you could write it in HTML if you wanted to, you know, keep your geek cred.
Yeah, I was going to do it in hex, then just kind of on the fly go back out. But, I'm going to go back to Emacs for that one.
713-526-5738. Somebody dialed that number, got lucky, got the first line. Who is it?
That person is Jacob.
Jacob, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, guys. Thanks for the show. I have sort of an old laptop, and I consider it my kind of like a toy laptop. So I went ahead and installed Ubuntu Linux, I think version 11, just to kind of, you know, get my feet wet, get used to a different operating system. And what ended up happening is it did something to my wireless card. It's a Dell laptop Inspiron, kind of an old version. And so I don't know if you guys have any recommendations for some sort of driver or something online for getting my wireless card you know, back up and running. The only way I can get internet is if I have it hard linked into my cable modem.
There is a way to do it. So I can't remember the exact steps, but more or less what you'll want to do is get it online through the Ethernet connection. And then if you go into, I think, up on the wireless card, you're going to want to tell it that it's okay to install proprietary drivers.
Okay.
Because that Dell wireless driver is going to be proprietary. It's kind of, I've got an Asus netbook, and it does the same thing. Now, the bad news is, like, I tried it twice. Once it just kind of hung everything, and I could never get it back. The second time, it worked for me. So it's kind of touchy. So make sure you've got a backup of everything first. But if you search, let me do a Google thing right now, but if you search for enable proprietary wireless drivers for Ubuntu in the version you've got, it should kind of walk you through there.
Okay.
And it may be something you do on the updater screen, but there's definitely a way to do that.
Right, right. Okay, so I'll go ahead and search that. I know it's kind of a pain. That's one thing that I did read about after the fact, after I installed Ubuntu, and I started reading a whole bunch of blogs about, oh, it's going to be a pain to get this back up and running. But I'll go ahead and start there and see where that leads me.
There are a couple of articles, How to Geek Has Something. A couple of the other ones do, but that's what you want to do is just search for proprietary drivers enable.
Okay, perfect.
Actually, it's restricted drivers available. That's what you want to do. And then once you get those in there, reboot it, and you should be in good shape. Every once in a while, if it hangs on those, hard power the wireless off and then power it back on with a button on the side, and it should detect it right away.
Okay.
All right, good luck.
Okay.
All right, anything else?
Thanks so much.
Sure thing. No problem.
Have a good night.
Bye. You too. All right. What?
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 All right.
My name is up.
That's, I mean, Ubuntu's really cool, but they really take a hard stance on non-free software. So if you happen to have hardware that requires proprietary drivers, and that just means they can still be free, but they might not have the source code for it. You actually have to go and enable the use of that. So they've kind of, they make it hard for non-free stuff.
Hard, non-free stuff.
It's hard. It's hard. Non-free stuff.
Who's up, Groovehouse?
Up next, we're going to take Jason.
Jason, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
All right. Here's I'm trying to get a smartphone, and I'm used to it. I have a little flip phone. It's a prepaid AT&T phone for like $50 a month. I get unlimited talk and text, right? And I got this new iPod Touch that's awesome. But I can only access the internet when I'm in a Wi-Fi spot.
Right, that's the way it's designed.
Right, of course, and I get why, because if I get the internet on it, I wouldn't need anything else. But now I need to get the iPhone, right? So here's the deal, right? I've looked at these iPhones, and I'm lost. I don't know what I need, what I want, right? And then you have to pay $30 a month for internet service. You get on there.
Yes, you pay $30 a month for internet service. You can still use Wi-Fi with the iPhone. It will also work on Wi-Fi as well.
Well, that, you know, that's kind of defeating the point. Like, I'd like to be able to get internet access anywhere.
Okay. Right, but it doesn't that's really what you're paying the $30 for.
Right, it doesn't defeat the purpose. It gives you alternatives because you can use the broadband internet access, you know, through the cell carrier to get internet anywhere. But if you happen to be someplace that has Wi-Fi, you can jump on the Wi-Fi there and save money on your data plan because a lot of these carriers charge you extra if you use over your allotment of data, depending on who you sign up with.
Right.
And one thing, you know, if you are around Wi-Fi most of the time with your iPhone, you can actually get a less expensive plan. If, for example, just say you're on AT&T, you can get 200 megabytes for $15 a month. That's pretty easy to blow through, but if
you don't even know what that means, you know, I'm scratching my head.
Well, what do you say you have a phone right now?
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of phone is it?
It's just like one of them little flip phones, man.
Okay, so you just make phone calls, you call up, you know, you make your deals, you make your appointments, you just chat with people.
Do a little text,
right.
Maybe. Yeah.
Right. So, when you think about a smartphone, you think, okay, my name is Jason, and I want to explore smartphones. What are you thinking that you're going to do with it? What is going to be the principal impact on your life when you use a smartphone?
Well, the only thing that I could see is that I'd be able to get high-speed internet access wirelessly wherever I'm at.
Right. So, but is that something that would benefit you? I mean, when you're
absolutely
moving around, having your email available to you on your phone, that might be
absolutely
something you like.
Business wise, absolutely.
Looking up websites,
easier.
Getting information, that kind of stuff. So,
absolutely.
So we start talking about how much data you're going to be using. If you're just doing email, a little bit of light web browsing, you're not using a lot of data. But if you're streaming videos, if you're uploading and downloading pictures, you're going to start to use a little bit more data. And there are websites out there that talk about, you know, how much data is consumed by how much, what kind of activity we're talking about. So,
right. Okay.
So as with anything, you pay more if you use more. So AT&T has, for example, we're not necessarily pushing AT&T, but AT&T with the iPhone, let's say you get an iPhone, AT&T has a set rate for, here's how much data you get for this amount, 200 megs for $15. Not a lot of data. For most of us, that's going to be kind of that's going to be very restrictive for a lot of us. So you're looking at probably going with a $30 data plan that's going to give you, I think, 2 gigs of data.
Well, actually, it's $25 for 2 gigs a day.
$25.
2 gigs of data. And
but if you're worried about the amount of bandwidth you might be using, then you could consider Sprint, which is currently has the iPhone as the only company that has unlimited data that I know of, like of the big carriers.
Right, I've seen that.
So you wouldn't have to sweat that at all. So you would basically then would have, you know, you'd have a phone, you could use all the data you wanted, and get internet access. The I think the downside on that, and this is where, you know, this does get confusing really fast, is the downside is that the Sprint network is not known to be the fastest network.
I don't have any problem with it.
None?
I stream Netflix.
But you have a 4G phone. The iPhone is a 3G phone on Sprint.
Even when I had a 3G device.
Really?
It seemed like it was decent. Okay. I was not complaining. I'll tell you that. I live in the city.
That's good to know.
Okay. I live in the city.
There's a voucher from somebody who actually uses the service. So, you know, that might be an option for you. So,
and are there any companies that would... say charge you for the phone service but then give you the data for free?
No.
Nobody's doing that.
They haven't done that yet.
Nope. No. And they won't.
Of course not.
At one point in time in the past, you could kind of get around it sometimes because they didn't have it tight control of it. So there are some cases where people were getting data because they said they had a phone that didn't have data, but they got a phone that did data, and it wasn't. They didn't block it. But, yeah, nowadays they've locked that down. That's really hard to get around to, impossible
and
to get around.
Because of congestion issues, you know, they are, that's one of the reasons why they charge what they do, and one of the reasons, at least on AT&T and Verizon, they no longer have unlimited plans, and it's pretty sure that at some point down the road, Sprint will drop that too.
And something else I've heard is that they have them where they create their own hotspot.
Yeah, you can buy a phone, you can pay for this, or you have to pay additional fee for that. So if you buy an iPhone,
it's $45 a month.
It has a hotspot feature where it would allow your iPod or Touch or whatever to connect to the internet through the phone.
Here's my quick question on that. For like a PlayStation 3 or Xbox 360, the gaming console,
you're not
going to
want to do that.
No, you still got to have the hard line.
You're going to benefit from having broadband, like in the form of cable or DSL for something.
And
like
you'll
that.
Blow past your gigabit limit. Really fast with doing that.
Yeah, the game will be over before it actually loads for you too.
Yeah,
so.
Great.
But one thing to keep in mind though is, I mean, if you're using an iPod Touch now, you basically have all the wireless access that the iPhone would have. So it would just be places that you don't currently have Wi-Fi access with your phone. I mean, with your iPod, that you would be able to use the phone. So if you on the iPhone, if you keep wireless on, then whenever you get into an area that Wi-Fi is available, and if you it will ask you about joining it. If it's one that you've already joined in the past, it will automatically join it. So in that instance, you know, it's only going to use the data plan for actually like through the wire of the, you know, telephone company.
Well, not in a hotspot.
When you're not on Wi-Fi. So if you're on Wi-Fi 90% of the time, then it's going to automatically be routing that through Wi-Fi and not using data on your data plan.
Right. Well, I would think that if I were a company, you might lose a little money up front, but you'd make so much in the long run. This iPod is the best thing I've ever... I mean, it does everything.
Right, the iPod
Touch internet service. Right, if it just did that one little thing. It'd be perfect.
Yeah, and it does. It's called an iPhone.
Yeah, exactly.
The other option is that you could buy a wireless hotspot that's just a hotspot that makes no phone calls. If you don't care about it making phone calls, it would do internet. You could use mobile hotspot.
You get an iPad,
right?
Because an iPad basically is what you're describing. Except it's bigger than an iPod, but it's basically an iPod that has 3G connectivity.
Right.
Not all iPads have that, but that is an option on an iPad, is to get an iPad that's only Wi-Fi or an iPad that's Wi-Fi and 3G. But you don't actually use it as a phone. It's just that if you don't have Wi-Fi available, it'll flip to using
3G. It's like a
3G.
Big iPod Touch.
Just a big iPod. Yeah.
It's an iPod with internet connectivity.
Yeah, right, the iPod Touch can't do 3G. It can only do wireless.
Right.
But an iPad, the more expensive models can do 3G or wireless.
Yeah.
So that's what you're describing, except in an iPad form instead of an iPod form.
Hopefully that gives you some stuff to think about, and hope that
definitely
helps.
Definitely, man. Appreciate it. I'm struggling.
I hear you.
All right, guys.
All right, have a good night. Thanks. All right, Groove House, who's up next?
Up next, we're going to take Richard.
Richard, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm all right. I got probably a pretty simple question for you guys. There's an issue with my email. I'm using an HP notebook, and I got, you know, Office Professional. And the thing that happens is when I get emails, I got a couple of different email addresses. When I get an email, a little yellow flag comes down at the bottom and says there's an error. But I'm getting all my emails. And I took it to this guy that I know, and he, you know, did this thing over on the left-hand side, and it showed just a whole series of collections of problems with synchronizing deleted emails.
Right.
And it seems to be something that Microsoft knows about, and he was able to find some indication that it was a problem that they were working on. But I was just wondering, you guys know anything about this? And
now, would you say you're connecting with multiple different email accounts using Outlook?
Yeah, I got a business email account, and then there's another email account.
When you say business email account, is that Exchange, or do you know?
One of them is.
One of them is.
Yeah, one of them runs through a server at an office.
Right.
But the other one's just a Hotmail, and then I've got a personal one that I use this other internet service for.
The sync error tends to come up mostly with Exchange. I see that all the time with Exchange, and I don't know exactly what the fix is for that. If you're getting all your email, I probably wouldn't sweat it, but yeah, I have seen that Outlook will generate an entire folder of sync errors.
Yeah, that's what I've got going on. And like I said, I'm getting my email. It doesn't particularly bother me, but I don't like to have, you know, if there's something going on in the computer that is indicating an irregularity, even if there's not an irregularity, I just do not have the flags.
Well, do you say you're using it for business email. Do you have a business IT department?
I do not.
Okay.
I mean, but do you guys know about that as being an issue with Microsoft generally? Because this one fellow that I took it to did a little research, and he was able to find out that Microsoft says that's a problem, and that they're working on a fix for it.
What version of Office do you have?
2011.
There is no Office 2011.
For Mac.
Oh, for Mac. Oh, okay.
No, it's not for Mac. What's the most recent?
2010.
Yeah, 2010. Okay, that's the one I got then.
Well, if you go to, if you do a Google search on synchronization folders on Microsoft, Outlook has a whole page dedicated to it. Let's see. Synchronization issue folders appear in the navigation pane when you view the folder list. The synchronization issue folder contains logs of items that Microsoft Outlook has been unable to synchronize with your Microsoft Exchange server. So those sync errors are completely related to your business account if your business account is using Exchange, which it sounds like it is.
What does Exchange mean? Excuse me for being dumb.
Well, Exchange is one method of doing corporate email. It's a very common email technology.
It's Microsoft's mail server.
Yeah, it's Microsoft's.
I don't think that's happening here. I mean, I'm not that. This is not big corporation stuff. You know, I'm like, believe me, this is real simple.
Well, if you're getting synchronization errors and you're not connecting to an Exchange server, then those synchronization errors are erroneous.
Yeah, I think they must be, but how do you make them stop popping up?
Well, the problem that I have is that unless we can be sure about your mail situation, your Office mail, about whether or not that is, in fact, Exchange or not,
yeah,
then I can't really give you good advice, because it sounds to me like it might actually be Exchange. You're guessing, I'm guessing, but you're going to be the...
I'm telling you, basically, I get one email that comes through an Office server.
Right.
Like a small Office server. And I got another email that comes through Hotmail.
Uh-huh.
And I got this other... I live down near Corpus Christi and got this service down there called Cobridge. And Cobridge gives you an email called whatever, Cobridge.tv.
All right. Cobridge and Hotmail are almost certainly not Exchange. Hotmail's not Exchange. Cobridge, I can't speak to definitively, but probably not. But your work email...
Yeah, but it's just coming through a server.
That's what Exchange is a server. Okay. It's a mail server. It's a type of mail. So, okay, you can guess, but I'll tell you what I'm seeing, what I'm reading on Microsoft's site, and what I know from my own personal experience is that that these synchronization errors are tied to Exchange. So so you need to talk to your mail administrator. I'm hoping you have one.
Yeah.
And tell him you're seeing these errors and see if he can diagnose if there's an issue with your Exchange account. If you're not seeing that's something, because of the nature of how mail works, you have to work with your mail provider to sort something like this out. But if we go on to read here, the information in this folder may help your organization's support team or Microsoft Exchange server administrator determine what is wrong. The contents of the sync issues folders are not copied to your server. So that means that you're doing stuff in Outlook, and it may very well be that it's just errors trying to sync. I don't know if it's got a problem with the other two mail accounts. You want to diagnose this problem and solve it for certain. You take the Exchange, you take all the email accounts out except for one, or maybe create a profile for each email account and see which one's generating the errors. I'm sure it's going to be your work email, and that's going to be something you probably need to take up with your Exchange administrator. But if you don't have one, then the real question is, why are you getting Exchange-based errors in Outlook if you're not using Exchange? And that would tell me that you probably have something configured incorrectly in your Outlook client.
Okay, let me ask you this.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to let you go and let you stew on that for a little bit. I got a few other calls I got to get before the top of the hour. We do have some calls in the queue. If you do have a question or something, you want to elaborate on the subject matter, you can certainly email me or contact me via the website. Groomhouse.
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next, we're going to take John.
John, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I am kind of a Luddite on computers.
Okay.
I have been running Linspire for years only. And when you're doing a Google search, sometimes it pops up and it says, this website could damage your computer, and stuff like that, when you get about 100 searches in, you know? So, I think I want to put Windows on this machine and see what happens.
Just to see if it will affect your computer?
The messenger...
I've clicked on a couple of them and had no ill effect.
That's because you're using Linux, and actually if you were to go to a Windows machine, you're more apt to have it affect your computer then.
See, that's the thing. I want to see what happens.
You just want to see dangerously.
I want to know how I can restore my machine after I put Windows on it.
To go back to Linspire?
No, to make them both, because it says I can do that. I've looked it up.
Dual boot, in other words.
And if the Linspire won't let me do it, it says I can go to Nopix and...
He wants to do a dual boot system with Linux, is what he wants.
Yeah, well, I'm not worried about the dual boot, okay? My question is, when I put Windows on there, if Windows gets all messed up, do you have to always go reinstall the whole thing?
Depends on how messed up it gets. If I was going to do this kind of thing, if I was going to go looking for trouble on the internet, I might consider either doing it virtually, like having a virtual Windows machine, or just having a second computer. You can find, I don't know what your budget is, but you can find old computers running XP for relatively cheap. It's like you go someplace like the Goodwill has that computer place out there on Westheimer.
You get three of them for $80, right?
People are giving them away on FreeCycle.
Sure. You could find a computer that you could use just for the purpose of running a honeypot, or, you know, having a little, you know, I'm going to get in trouble PC. And then you wouldn't have to worry about it. I mean, why would you take a computer that you know and love and works and turn it into something that is a virus trap?
Well, it would only be on the Windows part.
Well, so to answer your other question, if you get your Windows all messed up and filled with viruses and you can't do anything else, then you're looking at just blowing away and reinstalling it.
Well, I didn't want to do the reinstall because I've seen people do it, and it takes them like an hour and a half to install it.
It's going to take you an hour and a half to install it the first time, right? When you first set it up. So you're willing to do it once, but you don't want to do it again. But you want to go looking for a situation that's going to probably cause you to have to do it again.
Yeah.
Well, I can't really sympathize with that.
Okay. All right. One other question.
I'll tell you what, listen, we really are running short out of time. I need to limit you to one question because we actually started to get a bunch of calls coming in, so I apologize for that.
Okay, bye.
All right, thanks. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next, we're going to take Bob.
Bob, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
What's up, gangsters?
Yeah?
Hey, listen, the first guy that called regarding the telephone service, I use Simple Mobile, and you get unlimited internet. There's part of the cap to it, but at least you do get internet email.
Okay, you know, Simple Mobile?
Simple Mobile, and it's great. I mean, I haven't run into a cap yet, but you know, but you do get internet, and it's like 40 bucks.
Okay.
So, and the second guy, oh my gosh, is Exchange.
Are you just calling in to answer all the other people that have called in?
I just waited for air, man. What a way to force me to listen to the show. I'm just kidding. No, I'm actually calling to ask a question about Magento. It's about Magento. I'm not very familiar with it, and I am running our development server. I'm interested in moving it over to a new, like the actual domain, but I've never actually used Magento, and I'm not sure how difficult it is. And
what's the word you're using? Magento?
Magento.
Magento?
Magento? Is that
e-commerce solution for like websites.
I'm not familiar with it. So is it a server?
It's kind of like it's an actual CMS. It's kind of like using WordPress with like a e-commerce type plugin, but it's an actual e-commerce open source. Well, it's community source, I guess you could say.
So what do you want to do with it?
Well, I'm inputting all my products in it, you know, into the actual CMS, but I want to move it to the actual domain, and I'm wondering whether can I input everything in the database and then move it over? Will it keep, you know, everything where it's at, or will it mess up because it's a whole different domain, like the main?
Well, once you it's a Windows based computer, then right? Windows XP or 2000. Or something.
I believe it runs on a Windows platform. I'm not right. Sure.
Once you join that computer to the domain, you can still you'll log in with either a domain account, so that will create a new user profile. But if the database isn't tied to a user profile, which it shouldn't be, you should still have access to everything. But you could always go back and log in locally again.
Well, I know. I think the application is actually like a WordPress type application that you actually run on a server and install.
Okay.
So, like I'm saying, I'm not sure. Does it matter as far as like what you just said as far as the database staying?
I don't think it's going to make a difference. I think it'll be there. But when you say you want to join it to a domain, are you talking about actually adding it to Active Directory as a host?
No. What I mean is like I have a domain name, a certain domain name. And right now I have a subdomain that I'm running on a subdomain, and I want to move it to a different domain.
Yeah, he's saying that he's got a development system. He's putting all the data in, and then he wants to try to hopefully export the database and then import the database.
Have an answer for something.com.
So you're moving,
import the database into a new location.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm doing it all on a subdomain because that way it doesn't. The main site is still very active and used every day. So as a way to kind of develop the site before I move it over, but I'm not sure if it'll actually take because the domain is very different than the subdomain.
No, I think what you want to do is you want to go ahead and bring up the new Magento installation, and then if you go into the Magento Extension Marketplace, which has a lot of third-party apps, there are a few different migration tools. The one I'm looking at, which is free actually, is the OS Commerce migration tool. And more or less, you install it on your first box, you point at the second box, and it looks like it copies the profiles, the database stuff, all your OS Commerce stuff, everything like that over. But I would go looking there. There are going to be some plugins, some tools to help you. And I found these in the Magento Extension Marketplace.
I did find those as far as the migration tool. But I was wondering whether do you have to do a migration like that?
You were just talking about wanting this thing to answer for a host name on your new on your domain, right? So let's say magento.mydomain.com or something.
Actually, think of it more like I'm building it on magento.mydomain.com, and I kind of wanted to put it on www.someoneelsesdomain.com.
Right. You know? So, I mean, the thing about this is that it's really going to depend on how they built the database, what entries are in the database. There's probably somewhere in the database there's going to be an entry for the host name, right? And that would probably have to be changed when you exported the database and then import it into the new one, because otherwise it would retain the old host name.
And I think that's my question exactly. Is it as simple as changing the host name?
We don't know the software.
That depends on how they built their software, where it stores the data. You know, I mean, that can't really be
is
answered.
Is this commercial
except
software
by people
or is
know
this free software?
No, it's open source, but then they also have like a corporate version, meaning like the community version is open source, but they have like a
if somebody
version.
Has a migration tool, that's probably going to be the easiest way to do it, because otherwise you're going to have to go in and you're going to have to look at
update
all the tables
all
in the database
yeah.
and do searches through your exported data to see where anything is that might be connected to the old machine, IP, host name, user account, any of that. So probably using the migration tool would be the easiest way to do that.
Even if they're on the same hosting company server, you still have to migrate it?
I don't know the answer. We're not going to be able to speak definitively this, and I don't know that I would necessarily call into a radio show full of people that aren't familiar with the software and go with their advice. I mean, that sounds, you know, pretty adventurous to me, but
hey.
What I would say is that there has to be a discussion forum for this open source software. So if you probably ask this question of somebody in that forum, they'd be able to speak to it a lot more definitively and more informed than we could. And
I
would
worry.
No, I'm just I would just go with their advice and see what they say. But based on, you know, I know that Flickit, I know that Barrett has some database experience, and they can be really problematic. I have limited experience, but I know if you start moving these things around, there are hard-coded entries in the database that make it respond to the way it was set up.
But the thing that would be super nice is if there was a config file that had the basic hostname information in a text file and a config file, and then the database didn't have anything that was like hard-coded to the server it was on. But there's no way to know that because I've never seen this software in my life, so I have no idea how
they did it. I appreciate it, man. Y'all guys keep up the great work.
All right, thanks for your call tonight.
All right, gangs.
All right, word. Groovehouse,
yes.
Who's up next?
Up next, we're going to take Michael.
Michael, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Technology Bites. How are you doing? Hey, are you guys programmers?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, not me, but
do you know
they
C?
Are.
Sure.
Yes.
I know all the letters of the alphabet.
We don't have to get very high for that one.
I haven't done any C in a long time.
You guys are really hard to hear. It's cutting out.
Okay. So you're familiar with the C language?
No, I'm a C. That's what I'm trying to learn. I'm learning Objective-C, but everything that I'm reading is saying you really need to get a basis in just straight C. But I've got I'm trying to find like a C compiler because everything that I'm going to is just saying you know open a terminal and then point it to your file. But like I don't even know what
so
file
here's
it's talking about.
Here's what you need to get. Are you on the most current version of OS 10?
You what?
Are you on the most current version of OS 10? It's for a Mac, right?
I'm Snow Leopard.
Okay.
On the most current Snow Leopard.
Okay, that's fine. Well, you want a package called Xcode.
I have Xcode. I have the iOS. SDK. I have all that stuff, so I haven't started compiling Objective-C yet. I have the books and everything. It's all set
okay.
Up,
so slow down for 1 second and take a breath.
Hey, Michael, take a breath. Hang on.
So here's the there are two parts here. So the thing to get your head around when you're compiling C code is that you're going to need a tool chain, which is what the Xtools and Xcode is, and then you're going to need something to write code with. So OS 10 comes with Xcode comes with a compiler that's okay. The one I would go get is Eclipse. It's like the sun eclipsing or like the Twilight movies, eclipse.org. And then you want something called the CDT, which is just the C++ development tool. So if you get that for OS 10 and download it, it'll actually find your local Xcode. And you can have debuggers. You can have a whole bunch of stuff. You've got everything you need to be able to follow along in books and follow examples to do everything. But that's the tool chain you need. And the nice thing is if you learn Eclipse, you can take that to Objective-C. You can take it to any other language you want because the IDE is separate from the language, which is kind of separate from the tool chain, really, because you can get any kind of compiler you want. Eclipse, like Eclipse.
No, I got that. I thought you had something after that.
Oh, yeah. C is in C. D is in development. T is in tool. CDT. So
Charlie David Tom.
Yep. Charlie Delta Tango. So, yeah, search for that.
Military,
I
want police.
Oh, police, yeah. I need to learn that one.
All right, thanks, y'all.
All right, thanks. Well, that was kind of hot, Barrett, that programming talk and compiling stuff.
You got to slow down newbies because they'll just burn themselves into the ground just trying to get out of the gate. So, yeah.
Just hyped up on the Mountain Dew and ready to write some code.
Big time.
Also, I wasn't sure he was like, I couldn't tell if he understood how to open the terminal.
Yeah, that might have been. If he opened the terminal, you could type
applications
GCC.
As applications, yeah. Utilities, terminal. In the GUI, that'll open up a terminal window. At that point, you have a command prompt. Or, a CLI, command line interface. And then, you can type GCC to see if you have it.
That's one for the best of Technology Bytes.
Yeah. But it's you go, if anyone does want to mess around with programming, you get it for free. It's like 5 gig download. That's the most expensive part, probably.
You too can be a software developer.
Call now.
We actually have enough calls probably to get us to the end of the show. So who's up next, Drew House?
All right, up next, we're going to take Steve.
Steve, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
Hey, I'm calling about the Samsung Galaxy Note that I bought, and I'm talking to you on. Are you familiar with?
We know it exists.
Well, I got one because I was given a lot of consideration to what smartphone I was going to buy, and I decided that I wanted to escape the tyranny of Apple. So
I hate the way they force functional technology on everyone.
Well, you know, in China where they do business, they have mobile execution squads, so that's what they're up to. But I'm trying to figure out what if this phone is HSPA Plus, which I know it's that, but it was advertised as LTE. And
who's the carrier?
Right now I have T-Mobile, which is the wrong carrier, and I got voice only, but the price is right. And I use Wi-Fi networks, and I don't really care all that much about high-speed data, but in the future I will. And it looks like AT&T is going to be the one to come out with this phone, so I'm going to have to switch to AT&T, which I'm not crazy about because they have a terrible reputation.
So where'd you get the phone?
Well, hold on a second. The Note, I believe, is a Verizon phone, isn't it?
No, it's not out yet.
Where'd you get it?
It's going to be... AT&T.
Do you have you've got a Note from AT&T?
No, I got it from a supplier. It's an unlocked import. I wouldn't buy a locked phone.
Oh, from China.
Where the death squads are.
Where the death squads, where they collect those phones from Apple.
What?
Nothing. All right, so you got a pre-production unlocked version of the phone.
Right, and I wouldn't want a locked phone anyway.
All right.
But it was advertised as LTE, and I figured, just tell me if I got this right, the only way I'm going to determine the speed or if it's LTE or not is to put an AT&T chip in it, pay for the data, and test it.
Well, it may work. It depends on if it's a GSM phone and it's working on T-Mobile, yeah, you'd have to put it on AT&T. But there are different flavors of LTE. So, for example, if you're somehow able, say, to get a Verizon phone onto AT&T, the LTE chipset won't work there. So you can connect it to AT&T, but if it's an unlocked production phone, you're not sure what it's tuned to, you may or may not be able to get it working on AT&T's LTE.
Right. Well, I checked the bandwidth. And it's not the right GSM bandwidth for T-Mobile, but it is.
No,
right.
It's not. It's AT&T. It's going to be set up to where it'll work on the AT&T
right.
network.
So then if you can get a SIM and you can try it on AT&T's LTE network, AT&T's LTE network is pretty damn fast. I've had a couple of AT&T LTE phones that I've reviewed, and it's spectacularly fast. You can get easily 35 megabits down on that network.
I heard you can get like 41 meg, but I don't know if my phone is going to limit me or not, and I probably should have waited, but I had to have a phone, and I just couldn't wait, and, you know, I did want to escape that tyrannical Apple company.
Yeah, so, well, you're gonna probably be with AT&T, who is also, they have a kinder, gentler death squad mentality going right now.
There's their stationary,
but you know that.
Stationary.
Yeah, but they're so bad. I mean, their logo even looks like the Death Star, kind of. So
you know that the same company that makes Apple's devices also manufactures Samsung's devices, right? You know that.
Well, I've been trying to research that. I thought they were South Korea.
They're South Korea, but they all outsource to the same group of Chinese companies.
It all goes through Foxconn.
It goes through Foxconn. So, regardless, so you're tyrannizing somebody.
Foxconn, where they have mobile execution squads?
Yeah, you are. You probably killed a few children.
Absolutely.
You definitely paid for some bullets.
Go ahead and, yeah. There's an unmarked grave that sheds a tear for you tonight, sir. All right, Groovehouse.
And the speed round, we are going to take Richard.
Richard, you're on the air with Technology Bytes. Or
hi.
Not.
Hi.
Hi.
My question is,
Well, actually, it goes back to that bandwidth, the control of the internet and the speed we're getting, and the download speed we're getting, and the upload speed we're getting. And I was talking about, I was thinking about Ken Lay at the point, and about Enron's broadband. Their philosophy on that was to kind of capture that broadband and just share it over the internet.
To commoditize,
they were going to commoditize and do broadband training.
I think this is going to happen in the future, and I think it's already happening, because I just did 12 months of Comcast, and it was constantly no price. And eventually, they just sent me a bill last month with different pricing on, you know, like they showed me my bandwidth and how much I'd used and how much they were going to charge me extra if I used bandwidth. And it was like, I thought it was unlimited. And then it goes back to like when I had first got my iPhone a year ago from one of the companies here. And they turned around and it was like, it's unlimited. And now if I was going to get a new iPhone, it's limited to 5 gigabytes a month.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I'm on the old plan.
So you're grandfathered, right.
But then I'm also asking, then with Sprint, it says unlimited. But I wonder what part they're going to start throttling the bandwidth. So you'll
say
unlimited, but they might throw.
Yeah, well, because everybody else abandoned it except Sprint. But I think Sprint hasn't abandoned it because they're hoping it will attract customers because they're one of the lower tier phone companies.
I wonder if they're going to start throttling it, even though it says
unlimited. We don't know. And my opinion on the whole throttling and limitation on bandwidth is that it kind of comes and goes. As the technology advances and the pipes open up, then they'll extend the limits, or they'll go back to unlimited.
Because before it was unlimited, it was limited. Like, the dial-ups were limited. You know, you could only use so much dial-up bandwidth.
Well, I used to have ISDNs.
Dual ISDNs. Oh, yeah, I had dual ISDN to the house. That was pretty sweet.
Yeah, dedicated. I remember it was like 54 up. Combine 128. You have to combine them to make
To 256. 256. All right, well, listen, we're out of time. We appreciate your call.
I'm going to make a donation to the radio station. I hope everybody else does it calls up.
All right.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks.
That's a good job. Thanks.
All right. Well, we are out of time. I don't think we can get to David, so I apologize, David, for not taking your call. You are welcome to contact us via the website if you have a question or you want to carry on.
Were you just thinking about BioShock?
I was. I wasn't gonna. Although the guy, I mean, that Scottish guy in BioShock is not my favorite, but it's the Irish guy that's talking you through it, though. It's definitely Irish. But yeah, I had that moment. I was waiting for my little
dreams.
Everyone saw Jago from DOS to Windows to Mac to gamer.
Yeah,
that's right. I love my Xbox.
Yeah,
but I was playing with the Wii yesterday. All right,
traitor.
Wow.
He's cross-platform.
That's right. All right, well, you've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
He's not there.
Oh, yeah, Peter Hughes is gone.
Yeah.
I'm Flicton.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
And we'll see you next Wednesday night for more Technology Bites. Stick around for more great programming on your local station.
What do they want, these folks who are occupying Wall Street, Houston, and 150 other cities in the country? They call themselves the 99%, but who is the other 1%? What do the occupiers have to say about taxes on the wealthy, pipelines from Canada, bailouts to banks, air pollution, lack of jobs, and anything else that matters? You can find out by having a speaker from the occupation visit with you and your friends, neighbors, civic club, political organization, indeed, any group you want to put together. Call 832-368-8232. Leave your name, phone number, a description of your group, and the date and time you want a speaker to show up. We'll get back to you within 4 hours and arrange to have someone there to speak. Find out how you can participate, or perhaps not, in the movement that is transforming politics in this country firsthand from the people who are making it happen. That's 832-368-8232. KPFT Houston.
Want to help KPFT, but
can't make the drive out to the little house on Lovett Boulevard? A great way to aid KPFT is as simple as logging into Facebook and Twitter. Connect with KPFT via social media. It's simple. Just visit twitter.com/KPFT and facebook.com/KPFT Houston. Then share our links and donate form with your social circles on Twitter and Facebook. Chances are you know people who may not know KPFT, and you'll introduce them to the fantastic music, interviews, news, and more that you hear daily on this radio station. Remember, just visit twitter.com/KPFT or facebook.com/KPFT Houston to promote and support KPFT online. This is Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.